Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana, what I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in Monday edition of the program. Indiana gets its first road win in Big Ten Conference play last evening, and plenty to talk about coming out of the weekend. We're glad to have you with us. And a reminder, just here at the very beginning of the show, if you can't listen live at 11 o'clock when we're on the Big X, don't forget to join us, as many do, which is via our podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on SoundCloud, and really any place you may listen to podcast. All you got to do is search for the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison and you'll locate us there. But no matter if you're live or recorded or whatever the case may be, we're glad you're with us. We hope you join us every day this week as we talk IU and, of course, sports from a Southern Indiana perspective as well. Lots to unpack from the game last night. For the most part, I thought it was a great performance for Indiana, and that's kind of what you would expect against Nebraska, who's at the bottom of the Big Ten Conference right now. But it wasn't a total blow-away win for Indiana, because Nebraska did come charging back a few times, but especially in the second half when they cut it narrow for this Indiana team. So we will talk about that and a lot more in the program today. Let's take a look at the show lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany in segment one. In just a few moments, we'll start with our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. We'll really dive into the game last night, talk some of the key takeaways from last night's contest, and some other notes in college basketball, including the Big Ten Conference. How many college programs have been affected or are currently affected by COVID-19 as far as their program is on shutdown? We'll take a look at that. I really haven't seen a list, or we haven't talked a lot about it other than some Big Ten issues over the last week and a half or two. But how is college basketball doing as a whole right now? And I think from what maybe I expected coming into the season, better than what I thought it would be at this point. We'll take a look at that. And don't forget the national championship game tonight will be played, and Ohio State, can they bring home a championship and bring it back to the Big Ten Conference? They're definitely not the favorite against Alabama, but we will talk more about that game coming up here as well today also. That's segment one. Segment two, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star will join with Zach. We'll take a look at IU basketball. We'll recap the win on the road, the first of the Big Ten season for the Hoosiers yesterday. We'll also look ahead, because it's IU-Purdue, and I tell you what, that 3-3 record that Indiana has evened things out now in the Big Ten Conference really helps this Indiana team as they move into a big game with Purdue coming up at Assembly Hall on Thursday. We'll talk that, maybe a little football today with Zach as we start to really get into an off-season mode for IU football and recruiting and things that are going to be happening in the off-season time. But we'll talk that with Zach as well, and a little Big Ten today with Zach when he joins us in our program in segment two. Later in the show, Chad Gilbert won't join us today, but we will use that third segment to go through some of the happenings recently from this past weekend and looking ahead this week in high school basketball, as I normally do with Chad. New Albany gets a huge win over Jeff in a rivalry game on Friday. Jake Heidbreeder sets an important career scoring mark. We'll talk about that coming up today and some other big performances over the weekend as well. And again, a look ahead at this week also in high school basketball. We'll do that in the final segment today. That's the show lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Don't forget to check out their new dinner package deals that are now being offered. You can dine in, take them to go, and curbside service still available as well at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Zaxby's with locations in Jeff and New Albany. And we start with Indiana's win last night over Nebraska. A lot of takeaways from the game, at least for me. First, Al Durham and Rob Phinisee. And really, Rob Phinisee, let's talk about him first. He scored 16 of his career-high 18 points in the first half of play. He had some big three-pointers early. He had some drives to the basket throughout the game. He doesn't look like the same Rob Phinisee that we were talking about. In fact, that Archie Miller was talking about within the last 2 weeks, just being disappointed and needing more from some of his experienced guards and backcourt. Rob Phinisee was A1 in those comments from Archie Miller, but things have turned. Even though the Wisconsin game wasn't a win, it was a breakout performance, you could say, for Phinisee and for Durham as well. They got back to being their normal selves, or maybe more what you would have expected from them coming into this season. But last night, Rob Phinisee, huge for this Indiana team. In fact, toward the end of the first half, he went down. I'm not sure if ultimately it was a cramp or what, but he was kind of grabbing his knee, his leg area. And not that you want to see any player get hurt, but you really, in that game last night, think, oh, man, Rob Phinisee, you don't want to be without him, especially with how he carved up Nebraska early. And so he did come back and obviously started the second half and continued to play well. Didn't score it the same in the second half. Not sure that he has to score it at that clip for Indiana to be successful. But got to start with Rob Phinisee, I think. Al Durham as well, another solid game. He was in that grouping of experienced backcourt guards that have been somewhat disappointing this season. But he had a nice game last night as well, was solid throughout the game. And when you look at another player, this one coming off the bench, not a starter, Jerome Hunter for Indiana, 12 points, 7 rebounds, his best performance of the season. I don't think there's any question about that in his Indiana career, a big performance. And the potential that we always talk about with Jerome, maybe we are starting to see it. Now, he's had some health concerns and some issues, obviously, that have delayed, I think, his progress. So no knock on him necessarily. But last night, him coming off the bench, and I say that 12 points and 7 rebounds against Wisconsin on Thursday. Last night, it was 9 points and 6 rebounds. So, and that's in 20 minutes off the bench last night. So those two performances lumped together, that's my point here. A pretty good week, a pretty good two-game road series for Jerome Hunter. And it's going to be really interesting to see if he can continue to play serious minutes, and I think he will, but more importantly, can he contribute at that level? And if he does, he adds a whole nother piece to this Indiana offense especially. A couple other notes from the game last night. Indiana offensive rebounding was very solid. Indiana was very reserved on their turnovers, which has been another area that you kind of, if you follow this Indiana program, you know to watch in the box score after the game. And Indiana shot the ball extremely well in the first half. I mentioned Rob Phinisee, Al Durham, even Jerome Hunter hitting some long balls early. And then I thought Indiana really became reliant upon that in the second half. And even though the shooting was good there in the first half, you'll take it. You like to see it if you're an Indiana fan. I think we all know from following this team that it probably isn't going to be ever the most consistent thing. And so you get away from Trace Jackson Davis getting lots of touches in the paint and down low. You start relying too much upon three-point shooting and perimeter shooting. And that's what I think turned the table and allowed Nebraska to get back in the game in the second half and really to make it fairly competitive for a pretty late point in the contest last night. I also think it's interesting to talk about Trace Jackson Davis. Let me go back to the box score here for just a second. Jackson Davis finished with 15 points. Am I right? He had 2 points, 3 points, 4 points at the most at halftime last night for Indiana, 3 of 8 shooting, but he was 9 of 14 from the free throw line. It did not take long to see that Indiana was getting open looks for Rob Phinisee and Al Durham and others early in the game, as they were doing everything they possibly could with what they could throw at Trace Jackson Davis to not only keep him from scoring the basketball and getting any good looks, but really simply to keep the basketball out of their hand. And if you were judging just that at the start of the game or in the first half, that kudos to Nebraska. But unfortunately, they were down by, 10, 12 points at halftime. So they were giving up from other areas. And finally, Indiana was starting to hit some shots. But a number of positives last night. The negative is, Indiana lets Nebraska get back in the game because they became so reliant upon the outside shooting in the second half. But for a Big Ten road game, you get out of there with a win. Indiana, for the most part, throughout most portions of the game, was by far the dominant team. And again, when you break it down on an individual player basis, with Trace Jackson Davis just having an okay game, not really getting the touches that he normally would or should, other guys stepped up for Indiana. The shooting was better, the rebounding was better, and a number of positives to take away from that contest last night for the Hoosiers. And, of course, now they get ready for Purdue later this week. That's a big one in the Big Ten Conference. It's a rivalry game for Indiana. It's a home game, an opportunity to take a step forward as far as the Big Ten standings go. And Thursday, I like it as well. The women play and then the men play. Now, there's some space. There's some time between games. But I like that. Of course, it doesn't matter for the fans. They can't enjoy both because of the pandemic this year. But nonetheless, the men and the women take on Purdue on Thursday, which will be a fun, exciting, and, of course, anytime Indiana and Purdue play, especially that first time, to see what the matchup looks like. And this is a big one for both teams. Big stuff coming up on Thursday. Speaking of Purdue, they had a huge win. They beat Michigan State. Not that Michigan State is at the top of the conference right now, but the way they did it, they rallied from, I don't know if it was down 21 points. I'm just going off my memory here. Something crazy. Rallied very late in the game to win. And speaking of Big Ten Conference victories over the weekend, Maryland, a winner at Illinois. Now, Maryland is just 2-5 in conference play so far, so they're beneath Indiana. They're really in the bottom third or so of the Big Ten Conference, but they're two wins this season at Illinois and Wisconsin for Maryland. So, again, there's a prime example of a team at the bottom of the conference, and we talked some about this when Indiana beat Maryland, but is a team very capable of beating the best team in the conference as well. And Maryland is the chief example of that because they beat two of the best in Wisconsin and Illinois. So interesting there. Just, again, another example of what this Big Ten Conference is like and going to be like this season. How is the pandemic affecting college basketball? Well, the Big Ten right now, there's only one team on pause. But I saw Jeff Goodman put a list out this morning of teams currently on pause, and it's 44, which is up since Christmas, a pretty significant spike in college hoops teams that are on pause because of COVID since the Christmas holiday. ACC has two, Clemson and Georgia Tech. Let's see here. The Big 12 has none right now. The SEC, Missouri, and South Carolina are both on the list. I don't think I saw any conference that had more than four teams currently on pause. I think the SoCon maybe had four teams on pause currently and was the only conference with four on pause. But there was a little concern a week or so ago in the Big Ten with Penn State and Nebraska and Purdue, that game being postponed, and some other concerns kind of going around the conference that you wondered what things would look like as we got into the middle of January. But knock on wood, so far it's just Penn State that has really had an outbreak that's severe enough to have to pause things. And I think in their pause, they've lost three games. They've been off about a week and a half. This will be the 2 weeks coming up here in just a few days, and so they should be returning to play very soon. I mentioned that the college football playoff, the championship game, is tonight. Ohio State trying to knock off the big dog, the favorite in Alabama. I'm curious from Indiana fans, and you can tweet me and email and social media in your thoughts if you want to, and I'll try to take a look at them over the commercial break. But I'm curious, do Indiana fans, do fans of Big Ten football, do you pull for Ohio State in the game tonight? Do you want them to represent the Big Ten Conference to make Indiana's season and Indiana's battle against Ohio State, even though it was a narrow loss in the regular season look better? Or are you tired of Ohio State? Are you tired of them winning? Did you not like them besting Indiana for the conference championship game because of some maneuvering by the conference commissioners and just don't want to see them win? I'm curious what side of that you fall on. Do you not like the Big Ten rival and don't want to see them win the national championship? Not sure that they can, to be honest with you, over a really good Alabama team. But do you pull for them? Do you want them to win? Or do you want to see Alabama crush them because of your distaste, your dislike for them? I'm curious Indiana fans' thoughts on the football national championship game tonight. That's a look at our Zaxby's headlines for this Monday edition of the program. Don't forget, coming up later, Zach Osterman joins us in segment number two. Also, we will talk some high school basketball as well in segment number three. Chad Gilbert won't join today, but we'll go through some of the big performances, the big games over the weekend. We'll take a look ahead at high school basketball as well. We'll head to a break. We'll come back with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star as this Monday edition of the program continues. Big weekend for high school basketball coming up. Also, Jeffersonville has some more rivalry games. They've got Floyd Central on Friday night. That's a home game for the Red Devils. And then they hit the road and play at Providence on Saturday. We will broadcast both of those games here on the Big X Sports Radio. We're back with Zach Osterman. We'll talk IU basketball and the win over Nebraska. We'll even look ahead to the Purdue matchup and a couple football things, Big Ten things as well. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Monday program with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. Of course, we're going to start with last night's IU basketball win at Nebraska and more in this segment. And, Zach, I thought for Indiana last night to see Durham and Finnessey step up early when Jackson Davis was facing all sorts of defensive challenges from Nebraska. That was a great way to start the game for Indiana with some perimeter shooting, some three-point shooting. And Rob Finnessey had a career first half last night.
Yeah, Nebraska's a weird matchup for Indiana. Like, you know, especially since Fred Hoiberg got there, it feels like, you know, absent the Big Ten tournament game last year, which I think, you know, as much as anything else, even sort of removing the whole COVID aspect of it, probably just had a little bit of a sense of Nebraska being ready to be done with the season. Hoiberg has always kind of given Archie Miller trouble. And yet, Archie Miller, you know, he's never beaten him either. Archie's 4-0 against Nebraska. I think there is something to the way Nebraska plays that can get Indiana in a little bit of trouble sometimes. And last night was particularly interesting because Nebraska just sold out. And you could see this, and Archie even kind of admitted it after the game, the degree to which Nebraska was just hell-bent on not letting Trace Jackson Davis be the way Indiana beat them. And, you know, if that's going to happen, if that's what you're going to do, Indiana needs other players to step up. And as you mentioned there, particularly perimeter players, I think, what, Finnessey 18 points, Durham 17 points between them. I think five made threes. Finnessey in particular had a great first half. Obviously the offense in general cooled off in the second half. And, you know, we can talk about maybe some of the lesser aspects of Indiana's performance. But quietly, you know, those two guys, if you go back to December, appeared in a combined 17 games. Durham missed the one game at the beginning of the month with the ankle injury. And I think they only broke double figures in scoring three times. Now, obviously, there are other ways in which both of those guys can and need to impact Indiana's fortunes than just offensively. But you know, that's kind of a good baseline barometer. And you know, I think now in the last eight games combined they've played, going back to the last game of December, I think it's seven of eight games between the two of them in double figures, you know, on that road trip specifically. a combined 60 points, 14 rebounds, 17 assists. You just feel like you're getting, especially when you need it, when Trayce Jackson-Davis is getting all the attention he was getting, when Armand Franklin's out injured. It did feel, you know, quite frankly, like Indiana really just needed them to step up. There couldn't really be any other option, and they did. And, you know, Sunday, it was obviously crucial to an important win.
Talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, as we kind of go through individual players in the game yesterday to start, I also want to talk about Jerome Hunter, not just last night's game, but the Wisconsin game as well. You have to wonder, with those two performances, with the minutes that he played, the points he scored, he also was active rebounding in both of those games as well. Are we beginning to see Jerome Hunter finally turn the corner, return to full health, maybe return to full confidence as well, where he could be a solid contributor, not just get some minutes, but really contribute in the scoring column and other ways for this team on a regular basis?
Well, I think you certainly hope so if you're Indiana. And I think, to your point, I think the question is kind of, how do you define contributor? I don't think anybody's expecting him to suddenly average 15-9, you know. But I think that it's, that you bring up something there that I think is really relevant, which is his rebounding activity. You know, you look at his last three games, he's got 16 rebounds across those three games, and that's, averaging only about 22, 23 minutes a game. So that's a pretty good number. You look at his rebounding percentages, quite frankly, they are superb, especially defensively. And listen, this isn't a team that's ever going to be an offensive rebounding juggernaut. And from Indiana's perspective, you're certainly not going to be looking at somebody like Jerome Hunter to get you a bunch of offensive boards. But Jerome Hunter, right now, his defensive rebounding rate is 17.8%. His defensive rebounding rate in Big Ten games specifically, and, this feels like kind of the inflection point where we have to stop sort of, putting an asterisk next to Big Ten games specifically. When Indiana plays Purdue Thursday night, it will have played as many Big Ten games as it played non-conference games. And right now, Jerome Hunter against Big Ten opponents is pulling down 21.5% of available defensive rebounds when he's on the floor. That's just a superb number. And then you mix that with the fact that he's shooting better than 36% from behind the three-point line. He's starting to feel a little bit more like a volume shooter. He's starting to shoot a little bit more. We saw shoots of this last year where you felt like there were a lot of moments last year where you could just see Jerome Hunter maybe thinking his way through the game a little too much. And then maybe he'd have, kind of a run of two or three performances where it just felt like everything was kind of coming natural. Everything was coming in rhythm. I think you're seeing that even more so now, especially with the way he shoots the three. Obviously, he had that one late against Maryland that I think Archie Miller was pretty displeased about the shot selection, even though it went in. But I still also think there's an element of maybe him pulling the trigger on those shots without worrying too much about it, without thinking too much about it. And if Indiana starts to get, if Hunter can start to really be a rebounding and three-point shooting threat off the bench for Indiana, then that changes some things in terms of the way Indiana can kind of match up, especially as you start to think about getting Armand Franklin healthy, because you can potentially kind of play some lineups that maybe can play a little bit bigger but still feel, from an athleticism and switching perspective defensively, fairly small, and can really kind of fit some of the ways in which Indiana's improved defensively this year.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, our guest. Trayce Jackson-Davis, let's talk more about him. Nebraska, they had a great game plan, I guess. Had Indiana's shooting been woeful as it has other points this season, it may have been a really good game plan. But for Indiana, Rob Phinisee, Durham, others hit some outside shots and helped when Trayce Jackson-Davis, they threw everything but the kitchen sink at him. From a defensive perspective, I don't know where to look for this. You may know, but I would be curious how many even touches of the ball, especially in the first half, that Trayce Jackson-Davis even had last night. So he doesn't have his normal first half. Other things are working, if you're an Indiana fan, to still have the Hoosiers up at halftime. But the takeaway from last night from Trace Jackson Davis. In a normal game, he's going to get a lot of touches. He's going to score a lot of points. And he did finish with 15, I think it was, last night. But he was really good from the free throw line, and that's something you want to see from your best player who's going to get double teamed and fouled and sent to the free throw line most cases pretty often in games.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's kind of two aspects to that. One, you're absolutely right, and we mentioned it earlier. I mean, Nebraska really just the game plan was designed completely and totally around not letting Trace Jackson Davis, who enjoyed, you know, frankly, some of his absolute best performances as a freshman against Nebraska three times last season. I think they flashed a graphic at one point during the broadcast last night, and he basically averaged a double-double against Nebraska in 2020. Nebraska was determined not to let that happen again. You could just see that. And I think, you know, I think it fans sort of take that as, well, what happens if, you know, we hit a night where those shots don't fall? I actually think there's going to be a lot of opposing coaches that look at it and sort of say, well, actually, you know, here was a team that just did everything in its power to take away Indiana's best player, the player that it seems like everything's built around. Their offense starts with him, finishes with him, whatever. And Indiana hit seven threes and scored 42 points and a half. Maybe this team isn't as offensively limited as we thought. And if we just absolutely give them free and clear, wide open, totally uncontested shots, they're probably going to fall. I'm not saying Indiana's a three-point shooting nightmare, but I do think last night, you know, is probably going to disabuse as many coaches of trying that approach as encouraging it, you know, with Trace Jackson Davis going forward. And then to your point about the free throw line, I would even just take it sort of a step more fundamentally. 10 of his 15 points in the last, I think, 7.5 minutes of the game. So even on a night when Nebraska just, you know, just was clearly bent on doing whatever it could to keep Trace Jackson Davis from being the one that beats them, he still does. And he still finishes with a double-double. And as you say, he still goes to the free throw line 14 times. He gets 9 of those, a bunch of clutch ones down the stretch. You know, Indiana had a bunch of problems, you know, in watching an 18-point lead get whittled down to the point where they were trailing by 3 on Sunday night. And I think that there were some fatigue issues and, again, some system and matchup issues. But I also just think, you know, for the hand-wringing that maybe some people are doing today, Nebraska tried this, and it just emphatically did not work. And once again, as much as maybe you point at the smaller details and say, well, in this game, Indiana struggled with this, or this game, Indiana struggled with that, at the end of the day, Archie's 4-0 against Fred Hoiberg. And the point I guess I'm trying to make here is, in the aggregate, the system keeps working.
Talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. You know, as I look across the box score, one of the most interesting things to me, and you watch a game and you know this guy played and you know he had a stretch in this half or that half, but trying to put together the minutes without looking at the box score is tough for me. But looking at the box score, gosh, Galloway with 25 minutes, no surprise there. Leal with 22 minutes. Geronimo with 20 minutes in the game last night. Really, it was Christian Lander that just played 3 minutes, but some real minutes from some of those other freshmen last night, and I think that we kind of knew that based on what Archie Miller had said in some of his press conferences on his coaches show recently, that he had to extend the bench and find more minutes for Leal and Geronimo. But we're really beginning to see that pretty quickly for Indiana. A lot of these guys getting more minutes and way more than what they were just a few games ago.
Well, and, you know, you think back to the Wisconsin game, too. I think a player like Anthony Leal, you know, sort of earning those minutes. Obviously, Trey Galloway has been a fixture in the rotation and now more recently a starter, you know, pretty consistently this season. You know, some of it is also down to not having Armon Franklin and, to some extent, Joey Brunk, although, at this point, I think it's fair to classify that as sort of a long-term kind of problem to solve for Indiana and not something that's creeping up on anybody. But, you know, I think sometimes when you're playing those young guys, you're certainly giving them opportunity. And again, you look at a player like Anthony Leal, you feel like there's a certain level of reward for, you know, some pretty clear improvements, not just in offensive production, but, you know, defense and focus and sharpness and rebounding and some of those things. I also think too, and I don't mean this as criticism. I think sometimes too, it can be better to play those guys as a group, not all at the same time. But what I mean is build a sort of game plan of rotations around knowing you're going to play all those guys. So you're maybe not counting on one too much. You're maybe not putting one of those guys on the floor for 29 minutes and letting an opponent get an extended look at his weaknesses or his deficiencies or where maybe he lacks some confidence. If you're kind of moving him in and moving him out, you're giving it a chance to come in, you know, play hard and in shorter stints, maybe get some confidence out of that, you know, then come to the bench, get a rest, get a little coaching, and get back in without, you know, the opponent getting any real feel for the rhythm of how to attack them. But I do think that, you know, at the same time, I mean, again, even as we, you know, even as we think about kind of Armon Franklin coming back, I am interested because we don't know yet where he's going to be for Thursday against Purdue. And obviously Indiana needs him back as, you know, as soon as he's healthy to do so, healthy enough to do so. But it is interesting to me, you know, watching this last week, we're talking about, you know, Durham and Fennessy kind of getting their sea legs back a little bit after maybe a rocky-ish December. We're talking about Jerome Hunter looking more comfortable. We're talking about Anthony Leo looking more comfortable. So you remove your second leading scorer, maybe the guy who has been, you know, sort of your most efficient scorer in terms of his ability to use the three-point line this season. And all these other pieces kind of step up to fill that gap. I'm just kind of interested to see as Armon Franklin gets back, you know, how that reassimilates itself, if you want to say, in terms of maybe trying to sustain some of this impact so that you feel like you've got some, you develop some quality depth in Franklin's absence. But at the same time, obviously you don't want to be making Franklin feel like he's blunted offensively either.
Speaking of Franklin, Archie Miller initially said maybe out for two games, but wasn't real definitive. Any word, any insight on the injury for Armon and potentially how much longer he could be out?
Yeah, so he used the phrase for the foreseeable future before the Wisconsin game, which obviously I think is probably doesn't fill anyone with optimism. Then he, on his radio show, or his pregame radio appearance Sunday, Archie said Franklin had been getting a lot of treatment. And I think that I'm not positive on this, but I think the phrase he used was very doubtful for the Nebraska game. But at the same time, I think, you know, to go from out for the foreseeable future to being very doubtful pregame for, you know, a game just 3 days later, I think that would, to me anyway, that would be encouraging to suggest that Franklin made some really good progress having this week off. Obviously, if, you know, Indiana doesn't play again until Thursday, so that's 10 full days between Maryland and Purdue. You know, maybe he can't go then. And obviously, if it's a high ankle sprain, and, you know, all we know right now is that it's an ankle issue, high ankle sprains can be trickier to kind of come back from and to really just get them right and get them healthy. But it did seem like there was at least a little bit of a tone shift from Archie Miller Sunday talking about sort of Franklin's injury and where things stand. At the same time, it's not like Indiana doesn't need him, but I suspect you also kind of look at it and say, well, we're not going to rush him back. You know, we've got these guys playing well, and you're going to be home against obviously a Purdue team that, I mean, I don't know how many games aren't sort of must win in a really difficult Big Ten right now anyway, but this is a big one for Indiana for a variety of reasons. But I think we'll have you at very least get the sense that Indiana's kind of day to day with Franklin right now, that it's not a situation where they're just saying, well, you're not, you know, it's clear we're not going to have him for 6 to 8 weeks, so we're just going to shelve that discussion for the time being. And I think that at least feels like an improvement on kind of the early prognoses we heard.
Zach, I want to talk a little Big Ten basketball with you for just a moment. Last night, Maryland gets a big win at Illinois. Maryland 2-5 in the conference. Their two wins, Illinois and Wisconsin. I think that's a great example of the Big Ten conference this year. And then also Purdue, I thought another statement over the weekend from Big Ten basketball was their unbelievable comeback to beat Michigan State at the very end.
Yeah, I mean, this is the, you know, it we wondered if the conference would be as deep this year as it was last year, and I think the answer is yes. I was one who kind of looked at it and said, well, maybe it's not 10, 11 teams deep like it was a season ago. Maybe it's only going to be, you know, 8 deep, but it's still going to be really strong. I think there's only one team in the conference, at least last time I looked at the KenPom ratings, there's only one team in the conference that's not top 60, and that's Nebraska. And that's why, you know, for all the maybe stress that the in terms of the way the game actually played out, I think from Indiana's perspective, the important piece was just getting out of there without a loss, because they're really the only, even Northwestern at home, at least right now, maybe the bottom falls out of the tub for the Wildcats, but for the moment, even Northwestern looks like a decent quality, not I would say quality loss, but it looks like a loss you can take. It's a loss you can handle. This is just a really difficult league. I mean, and I know that's cliche and whatever, but I mean, just look around, you know, to your point, look who's beating who, look where, you know, different teams are. You feel like you've got, you know, Rutgers pinned as maybe a dark horse push for the title. Now all of a sudden they're really struggling. Michigan State looked terrible. Then they looked really good. Now you've got questions about them again. Maryland, as you said, their only two wins are 2-5. Their two wins are at Wisconsin and at Illinois. So what do you make of that? I don't think any of us saw Michigan off to an undefeated start in conference play. It's a conference where it's just, I mean, it's going to be rough all year. And the flip side of that, though, is virtually every game from here on for Indiana is a quality win opportunity. You know, either a quad one or a quad two. And so that means that every win Indiana adds now, and this is, of course, true for everybody in the conference, sans playing Nebraska, every win you add now is a win that goes somewhere on your NCAA tournament resume. And I think that
– Zach, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, I think that's kind of the upshot to playing in such a difficult conference, is that the opportunities are always going to be there if you need to improve your postseason resume somehow.
Zach, I've got to close with the Ohio State-Alabama national championship game tonight. I'm curious your thoughts on the game. Does Ohio State have any chance? And I've not followed it extremely closely over the weekend, so I'm not really aware what the health situation is of both teams, especially Ohio State. I know a week or so ago there were some rumblings and rumors for a brief period there that the game might be postponed to January 18th because Ohio State had issues with an entire position group. But I'm curious your thoughts on the game tonight. And I'm also, this is just your opinion here, do Indiana fans, Indiana football fans in a game like tonight, do they pull for Ohio State and the Big Ten to be well represented in the national championship game? Or because Ohio State's always the favorite and always beats Indiana, and of course this year got slid into the Big Ten championship game slot over the Hoosiers with some finagling by the conference commissioners, I wonder, and you may not have a real feeling for this, but I wonder where the majority of the Indiana fan base stands on pulling for Ohio State in a title game or not.
Yeah, I mean, so I think two part answer. One, it does seem like Ohio State is certainly healthy enough for the game. Obviously, it's going forward. It seems like other kind of than that early murmuring, it doesn't seem like there's been kind of an explosion of concern beyond that. If anything, it sort of felt like everybody kind of tried to downplay that after it came out. From a matchup perspective, quarterbacks like Justin Fields have given Alabama problems down the years. Quarterbacks that can push the ball downfield with their arm accurately, but at the same time can really force Alabama to move around defensively because of their mobility. Now, Justin Fields has obviously been dealing with the rib injury from the Sugar Bowl they played against Clemson. So we'll kind of see, you know, how that impacts, you know, if you want who I think is going to win, I don't think Ohio State's secondary is quite as good as maybe its reputation and as good as some Ohio State secondaries have been in the past. And I think that's a real problem when you're talking about facing an Alabama passing attack that is as good as this one is, from Mac Jones to Devontae Smith to, you know, frankly, just a flurry of other wide receivers. that Alabama's got that can hurt you. I don't think Ohio State's going to be able to hold up against that consistently enough, especially without maybe that Chase Young, Joey Bosa type pass rusher to really kind of affect things at the front end of the play to keep Alabama from scoring enough points to win the game. But from an Indiana fan perspective, and if you'll forgive just a very brief soapbox, I've tweeted about this in the last few weeks. One of the perception problems that I think the Big Ten fights, and I certainly think it was kind of laid bare this year, is that when the Big Ten does not have its traditional powers at the top end of the conference, it's considered down. When it's Indiana and Northwestern and Iowa behind Ohio State instead of Michigan and Wisconsin and Penn State, we say the Big Ten is down. When the SEC has, let's say, Ole Miss and Florida and Arkansas behind Alabama, as has been the case at times in the recent past, you think about the Bobby Petrino years at Arkansas, you think about the Hugh Freeze years at Ole Miss, you think about the many, many years that Steve Spurrier had South Carolina basically competing as the most consistent program in the SEC East, we don't say the SEC's down. As long as Alabama's good, as long as Alabama's kind of that lodestar program, it doesn't really matter who fills in around them. We just say the SEC is good. Look, this is for, you know, Texas A&M's great. Florida's great. Georgia's great. This is proof the SEC is deep and tough and strong once again. That perception doesn't impact the SEC the way that it does the Big Ten. And I think there's a variety of reasons for that. Some of them are deserved. I suspect many more of them are not. But I think that the big way that changes is if the Big Ten starts winning national championships. And obviously it would help, too, if it was more than just Ohio State, because the other thing that the SEC does justifiably point to is that Auburn's won a national championship in the last decade, LSU, you know, Florida going back to the 2000s with Urban Meyer, Georgia's been in a national championship game. You can't say that for Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan. I mean, only two Big Ten teams have ever made the college football playoff. One's Ohio State. And the other is one appearance by Michigan State where they got waxed by Alabama. So that's part of it as well. But the underlying point I'm trying to make is that the Big Ten just needs all boats to rise in terms of national perception, so that at some point we'll get to a point where, you know, the when Indiana is 6-1 and has beaten Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, and Wisconsin all in the same season, people won't look at it and say, well, that's proof that all those teams are down and the Big Ten is down. They'll look at it and they'll say what they said about Hugh Freeze's Ole Miss or Bobby Petrino's Arkansas or Steve Spurrier's South Carolina, that actually this is just proof that Indiana has managed to build itself up to a point that it can be near the top of one of the best conferences in the country. And I think that's a perception that really just only comes through winning, and certainly winning at the highest level. And it's not just down to Ohio State, but Ohio State winning national championships against SEC powerhouses is, I think, a big part of that, personally.
Absolutely. Good stuff. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star with us for really an extended segment today on IU basketball and Ohio State, the national championship game tonight. Zach, as always, appreciate you helping us get the week started, and we'll talk with you again next Monday.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, as always.
Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, with us always on Mondays to start the week. We'll head to a commercial break, come back in our final segment, go through some high school basketball notes from the weekend, some of the top performances. Of course, New Albany with a big win over Jeffersonville on Friday. That's one of the highlights from the weekend as well. We'll talk that and more. One more segment coming your way on this Monday. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this final segment. Some reports coming out now that Wayne Radford, who played on IU's undefeated team in 1976, died this weekend at his home in Indianapolis. He was 64 years old, of course, played for Bob Knight from 74 to 78, but most known for that 1976 year, part of that undefeated team in college basketball. So thoughts and prayers to his family. I believe that Radford was in attendance last season for the return of Bob Knight to Assembly Hall. I believe I remember recall seeing him there in the video and the pictures from that moment. But a former IU basketball star, Wayne Radford, passes away at the age of 64 years old over the weekend. High school basketball to close today. Probably no bigger story than New Albany with a 49-37 win over Jeffersonville. The Red Devils battled late to make it close. New Albany, thanks to Tucker Bivin, able to put some space again between the Dogs and the Devils there at the end. Bivin, 22 points, including getting fouled on an and-one three-pointer late in the contest that really helped New Albany keep control of the game. Caden Stanton looking back to his normal self. He had a couple down games, at least in the scoring column for New Albany, but he finished with 14 points in the win against Jeffersonville. That's quite the duo, especially in the backcourt, Bivin and Stanton for New Albany. But some great defense as well in that game. Maddox Schmelz, Jaden Thompson, they were really good on some of Jeff's key players. Will Lovings-Watts, he had 11 points, but far from his average of 25.5 points per game. And the same for Razor Moore, Brandon Razor Moore. He was far from his average as well of 24 or so points a game. He had, I think, 7 or 8 in the contest on Friday. But New Albany kind of in the driver's seat for the Hoosier Hills Conference, which is surprising. New Albany's had some good moments this year. They battled out a win, kind of an ugly game against Floyd Central. They were able to get the win Friday over Jeff. Still have a number of Hoosier Hills Conference games to go, so a lot can happen. But the good news is, if you're just a fan of high school hoops or you're a fan of another school like Jeff or Floyd, you know, if you replay these games, I'm not sure what the result will be. And I think that puts us for some competitive matchups when we get to Seymour in that 4A sectional. Also, got to mention that Jake Heidbreeder surpassed 1,000 points on Saturday. Floyd Central added a game against a good 2A school, South Spencer, and was victorious 69-60. Brady Moore led the way in scoring. He's really come on for Floyd Central. He had 20 points. Heidbreeder finished with 17, but again, 1,000 career points for him, and he's got the opportunity to add more to his total before his career comes to a close at Floyd Central this year. Also, the big battle for Clarksville was Friday, and the Generals win a good one, 48-45 over Providence. That game wasn't decided until the final seconds of the contest, but it was Caps, Dakota Caps, 18 points leading the way for Clarksville in that game. Well, that'll wrap it up for today. Back with you on Tuesday at 11 a.m. with Greg Doyle, Mike Pegram. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.